invaders. Alien beings from a dying planet. Their destination, the Earth. Their purpose, to make it their world. David Vincent has seen them. For him, it began one lost night on a lonely country road looking for a shortcut that he never found. It began with a closed, deserted diner and a man too long without sleep to continue his journey. It began with the landing of a craft from another galaxy. Now, David Vincent knows that the invaders are here, that they have taken human form. Somehow he must convince a disbelieving world that the nightmare has already begun.
It was the opening of a show way back in television history about UFOs. It was called The Invaders. I thought it would be appropriate tonight, and you'll find out why. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin. And tonight, we're going to deal with the Skinwalker Ranch, where things happen, and no one knows the explanation. Everything from vortexes to strange animals to UFOs. David Weatherly is our guest, and David Weatherly has been doing this for some time, well over three decades, investigating the paranormal and UFOs as well. And David tonight will talk to us about something that happened at Superstition Mountain, close to where he lives in Arizona. I think you need to stay tuned to find out what we're talking about. The details, reptilians, and a woman on a lonely highway near the famous Superstition Mountains. But I don't want to give away the whole show, so let's introduce David Weatherly now. David, welcome to the show.
Jerry, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, David, thanks for coming on. We're going to have a hot show tonight. In fact, is it hot where you are?
It's very hot. I'm in Arizona, so we're somewhat used to it.
Well, it's July, so most places it is hot. Anyway, David Weatherly, welcome to the show. You've been a busy guy. I know you were at the UFO Paranormal Symposium in Sacramento, and now you're going to be at the Wake Up Now conference coming up in August, 10 through 12. And that's in Albuquerque. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, I sort of am. I did the Alamo UFO Conference, of course, in Nevada, and Anthony Sanchez's Paranormal Summit in Sacramento, which was just an incredible event. And that was the first one of, I think, what it's going to be many for many years to come. He's going to be doing that. And it's been kind of nonstop. I had a book come out in March, and since then I've just kind of been a little bit of everywhere. Still have a lot of shows coming up. The, of course, Wake Up Now conference in Albuquerque next month. That's always a nice event. And I'll also be at the big Paradigm Symposium in Minneapolis later this year. That's in October, put on by Intrepid Magazine. And that's going to be an incredible conference. Everybody from virtually from Ancient Aliens will be there. Bill Burns, Georgie Tsoukalos, Philip Copens, and the big one, Eric Von Däniken, one of my personal heroes. I read this guy's stuff when I was a kid growing up, and it was part of what got me started on the whole path of exploring, you know, the paranormal and UFOs and everything else. So that's going to be an amazing event.
So for David Weatherly, 2012 is going to be a busy year.
Yeah, I sure do.
And
a lot of people think it's the last year, so let's go out with
it. Yeah, it might be our last one, so you might as well, you know.
Well, I don't think it's the end, so.
Seriously, David, what do you think about 2012?
Well, you know, I've actually spoken with a lot of Mayan elders down in Central America, and I kind of put it this way. It was a cartoon that ran. It's made the circles on the Internet, and it's a stone carver. It's an old Mayan stone carver holding a big wheel, and he's holding this wheel in front of the chief, and he says, "Hey, I only had space to go up to 2012. And the chieftain says, "Ha, that's going to freak somebody out someday." So, you
probably
know,
more troop to the end of that than you think.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll all be here to celebrate New Year's 2013. But, you know, there are things genuinely going on. I mean, this is a really critical time, not just in our country, but in the world. And if you talk to a lot of these Native elders, you'll find that there's a pretty consistent message that really what we're approaching is a shift in consciousness, because it has to happen. It's not only going to happen, it has to happen, because we just can't continue on the path that we've been on. It's not feasible.
Yeah, David, you mentioned Native Americans. You're no stranger to some of those legends of the Native Americans.
Yeah, I sure have. Along with really exploring the world of the paranormal, the other side of my life path, so to speak, has been learning from as many tribal elders as I can find, and not just in Native America, but also, I've spent time with Tibetan elders and elders from Africa and Europe, and really looking for sort of the core of this ancient wisdom tradition that runs, all around the world. It's pretty consistent. And it's funny, because with all the things that are happening in the modern world, I see more and more people turning back to these traditional ways to approach life, so to speak, and realizing that, massive government and taxation and all these concepts that the modern world has are not really what's going to save us. We all need to sort of find our own path spiritually, so to speak, and go back to some real basic principles in order to evolve through this cycle that we're in.
To the average person, they probably haven't followed this, but with these native cultures around the world, there seems to be an intermingling of ideas from North America, South America, wherever.
Absolutely. And what's happening, actually, is that, in the last 10 years maybe, very slowly, science has started to look into the direction of the mystic. And, we have things now like quantum physics and all the quantum sciences that have come along, because science reached this point where it started getting into some very strange territory, trying to understand why certain principles, worked or didn't work. And when you go back to these ancient traditions, you find that the answers really are there. Case in point is most cultures around the world have some belief in the human energy system, the human energy body or energy field, however you want to phrase it. And, for a long time, science says, well, that's not really proven. But, several years ago, science suddenly came out and made their proclamation that, the human body does emit an energy field. Well, yeah, they've been talking about that for a couple thousand years in China. They call it qi, and they use it to heal and do any number of other things. And, hey, you find it in Hawaii, you find it in Europe. Wow, it's universal.
You've been investigating paranormal experiences, spirituality, UFOs for a long time, David.
Yeah, just an extensive background investigating the paranormal.
We mentioned the Wake Up Now conference in Albuquerque, which is August 10th through 12th, 2012. Nick Redfern, who's also going to be there, actually wrote a great review about your book, David. Did you read that?
He did. It honestly humbled me when I read the review, because, he was basically saying this is a book that you have to buy. And coming from Nick Redfern, that's, pretty impressive. I mean, Nick is amazing with the amount of things he's investigated. And, of course, he puts out a book, practically every week. So,
yeah, we have a hard time keeping up with Nick. I mean, after all, we like to do an interview every time he has a new book. And it's hard to keep up with him. He turns them out. Boy, does he.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so he did an amazing review of the book. He posted it on his blog, and it was on Mysterious Universe. I hope I have that right, is where he posted the review. But it was interesting, because the book, incidentally, for listeners who don't know, is called The Black-Eyed Children.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the title of that book, because it's incredible. We want to talk about it here in a moment, but first of all, where is that book available? Where can our listeners find it?
That book is available at, you can get it directly at leprechaunpress.com. If you order from there, the copies are signed, if that makes any difference to anyone. It's also available on amazon.com.
Yeah, and I like the book cover. I believe Scotty Roberts designed that for you.
And He's a graphic designer, and he came up with something that blew me away. I think it kind of rivals the communion cover for Whitley Strieber's book. And, you know, it's this image of this child with completely black eyes. And it's pretty creepy subject matter. What's happened is these children have started showing up around the world at this point, and they appear at people's doors. Sometimes they appear at a car in the parking lot. They show up at hotel rooms, boats, anywhere these kids can show up. They will knock on the door, and when the, for lack of a better word, victim answers the door, these children start making requests. And they say things like, it's late, why don't you invite us in for a while? Now, normally these kids are standing sort of awkwardly, just sort of with their hands down at their sides, their heads tilted down. They're usually wearing very drab clothing that's either, you know, very grayscale colors, or sometimes the clothing is described as being old-fashioned or handmade. Their skin is very pale. During the course of the conversation, they either look up at the person or the person will try to get a better look at these kids and discover that their eyes are solid black, and not just the pupil, but the pupil, the sclera, the entire eye is black. And what happens is, as the people are having this, listening to these kids, the victim grows more and more nervous, to the point where they virtually panic. They have so much fear, and most of the time they run away from these kids by, you know, slamming the door or driving away or just getting away in some fashion. The kids also tend to vanish very suddenly. You know, there's a lot of accounts in the book from people that are really trained observers, police officers, law enforcement, medical people, and you know, there's a stunning case of a sheriff's deputy who encountered two of these kids on a deck at something like 3:30 in the morning in a house. And this was a raised deck. He was blocking the stairs. He turned long enough to knock on the door of the house, and when he looked back, these kids had vanished. And, of course, it's kind of plagued him since the encounter. That was several years ago, and he still hasn't come to terms with exactly what it was he experienced, because there was just no way for those kids, even if they had leapt over the railing, he probably would have heard that, and he would have seen them running across his yard, because it was, you know, it was a wide open space. So these are typical of these encounters, and they instill this great level of fear in people who encounter them.
In your investigation, did you ever find out if somebody actually was hurt by these children, or is it just a psychological thing?
Well, you know, there's a lot of strange things when we get into that territory. First of all, there are a number of cases wherein the person who encountered the kids afterwards lost a family member, or sometimes they become ill themselves. There is one case where a child was, for lack of a better word, invited in, and it's quite a lengthy story. It's detailed in the book, but essentially it was a woman with her young son, her 10-year-old son, and they were in her SUV. She stopped at a convenience market to run in and get some bread and milk and left her son in the back seat. Now, this is a small area. You know, they know everybody in the community, so there's never been an issue. She's done this for a long time. And she was in there for a couple of moments, came running back out and jumped in her SUV. And, you know, the rhythm everyone gets in, you jump in the seat and you reach down to turn the key, and she looked in the rearview mirror, and staring back at her in the rearview mirror was a child with solid black eyes. He was in the middle of the back seat beside her son, who was directly behind her. And she felt immediate fear just from seeing this child. And she leapt out of her car and jerked her son out of the back seat and ran in the store. And, you know, as the story unfolded, a strange series of things happened to this family. You know, the husband ended up driving the SUV, and he totaled it. He was in an accident. Fortunately, he survived. But the young boy who had been in close proximity to this black-eyed child became very ill. And doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with this child because his symptoms kept changing. They thought at one point he had appendicitis. They thought at one point he had the flu. He broke out. They thought he had the measles. And so it was constantly shifting around, and they, as a result, they couldn't really diagnose him or treat him. So what happened was the family, you know, just called their clergy and just started doing a long series of prayer vigils around this boy because the mother was convinced that he had had a brush with something that was just pure evil. And eventually the young boy recovered. But, you know, the story as it unfolded was that he had encountered this boy. This boy walked up to the SUV when his mother was in the store and said to her son, you know, just started a dialogue with him. And this 10-year-old boy, all he saw was a potential playmate, you know. And the mother said, well, why did this boy just get in our car? And her son said, well, he didn't, Mommy. I asked him to get in. Mm-hmm. So all the cases there, I've never seen a case where these black-eyed children force their way into anyone's residence or car or anything else. They insist on receiving an invitation, which, of course, harkens back to classical, you know, undead or demonic lore. But it's very strange. It crosses a lot of the boundaries in the paranormal. You know, there are things that are in common with the undead, things in common with Men in Black, and, of course, alien hybrids, which is what a lot of people think that these children actually are.
About how old are these children? 10, 11, 12?
Yeah, there's a range that the bulk of the reports fall into, which seems to be between 8 and 13 years old, with, I think, the most often, the age I hear the most often, I believe, is around 10. And, of course, you know, some of these people are people without children of their own, so they're estimating, but we're still looking at the same age range for these kids.
These things happen only here in the U.S., or?
It's a worldwide phenomenon at this point. When I initially started investigating it, of course, I was getting a lot of cases from the United States, and over time it seems to have grown. And I think also people have gotten more comfortable with the idea that, wow, someone else encountered these things, so I can tell my story. So I have reports from places as diverse as London, South Africa, Australia, Canada. It seems to be a worldwide phenomenon.
I wonder if they're the same kids at different places around the world. You know what I mean? I mean, do they look the same, or are they obviously different children?
They all have solid black eyes, but otherwise there is some variation in...
What I'm getting at is I wonder how many children there are like this. Hundreds? Thousands?
That's really hard to determine. I think at this point that, you know, the as far as explaining what the kids are, there may be multiple explanations. It's very interesting. You know, when I wrote the book, I try very hard to – I don't push an agenda in the book. I pretty much lay out, here are the cases, here are the connections to all these different kinds of phenomena. And I let people decide for themselves. And it's very interesting because I've had people who read the book and, you know, they put it down and they say to me, they're alien hybrids. I know they are. And, you know, other people who say, nope, they're demons. You know, other people who say there's something else. So it's really interesting to see that as exactly what I wanted from the book. I want people to have all the information to make their own determination. From my perspective, at this point, I personally think that there's some kind of interdimensional being because there's just too many strange things that are associated with these kids and some of the cases, and even some of the cases I haven't published at this point, that indicate that they're either sort of shifting out of our consciousness or our level of existence. You know, when you have a trained police officer who glances away for a matter of seconds and turns around and they're gone, there's not a physical explanation that we understand to explain that. So there's something more going on.
This has to be one of the most unusual cases you've investigated, David. Over your 35-year career as a paranormal examiner and investigator, I suggest people get the book. Hey, how did you get started in the paranormal investigation field anyway?
I grew up in a rural area of North Carolina, and when I was very young, I was interested in all aspects of the paranormal, from UFOs to cryptozoology. But because of where I lived, I had very limited access to things. I had a handful of UFO books that I'd found or been given or something, and a couple of other things. And what happened was, this woman moved into a house very close to ours, an elderly woman and her husband. And I just started talking to her, and I found out from conversation that she was actually a spiritualist and believed, obviously, that, you could contact the dead, and had went to spiritualist churches and was really interested in all aspects of the paranormal. So I started to talk with her, and it's kind of funny. I went to her house one day, and she's sitting there reading Fate magazine. Now, I was a kid. I'd never seen this magazine before. It was a little digest size back then. It was in the 70s. And when I asked her about it, she handed it to me, and I looked through it, and I thought, oh, my gosh, there's, virtually this whole world of this stuff out there. And she told me to come back the next day, and when I did, she presented me with this huge box full of Fate magazine. And that just sort of opened my eyes. I think I was mysteriously sick from school the next several days, sequestered myself, and just, read through all of this material and realized, wow, there are other people who are interested in strange things, and, there's a whole world of phenomena out there. And I never looked back from that time. I just started exploring more and more, and took off on my own when I was a teenager, and just started going into, graveyards and abandoned houses, and going to places where there were UFO reports and anything I could find. I just started pursuing.
Well, Phyllis Galdi, you'd be glad to hear about this. What a testimonial for Fate magazine. She's the publisher of Fate now.
Just send her a testimony. Well, yeah, and of course, from there, I discovered people like John Keel, Eric Von Däniken, and of course, eventually I came across Charles Fort, and I just absorbed that stuff, when I was young. And I think a lot of people that are interested in the paranormal now, one of the big flaws I see is that, unfortunately, they watch a couple of hours of television on the paranormal, and then they go out and deem themselves investigators or whatnot. And they're really not giving themselves the opportunity of all the people that preceded us in this field and doing their research and study. And people are just uninformed.
Yeah, I want to discuss some more paranormal investigations and things, and even some hauntings. But this is a UFO show. You have any UFO stories?
I have one that's fairly recent that is a little bit out there, but I'll give it to you anyway.
That's the kind of stories I like. Go ahead.
I got contacted by a woman who said she had a UFO experience and what she believed was an abduction. And the story was that she was driving on a remote highway in Arizona, and she was heading towards the Phoenix metro area. This was late at night. Her car suddenly died, and she coasted off to the side of the road. Out of her windshield, she saw a disc-shaped object with multicolored lights. She passed out. She regained consciousness with the feeling of the heels of her feet being dragged across the ground. And she looked up, and she saw what she described as a reptilian. He made eye contact with her, and she passed out a second time. She regained consciousness again, and she saw the outline of the Superstition Mountains. Now, the Superstition Mountains are east of Phoenix. They're a known paranormal hotspot. There's a lot of strange, it's a very, if you've ever seen the silhouette of the Superstitions, it's very easy to recognize. And of course, she lived in the region, so she was well aware that that's exactly where she was. She, when she gained consciousness the second time, there were now two reptilians around her, and she was at the base of a cave entrance. And she passed out yet again. Now, she later regained consciousness in her vehicle and, you know, is very adamant about what she saw. I mean, she described these bipedal reptilian creatures. She did a drawing of one of them, but basically the description was, you know, that they were humanoid. Now, she described them as being around 5.5 feet tall, with basic human features as far as, you know, two eyes, a nose, and a mouth. She didn't see their teeth, but she did see scales over their entire body. And, you know, they were bipedal. They had two arms. She said she could feel the hand that was on her wrist, and that it was very coarse and claw-like, is what she described. I said their eyes were oversized, and that they resembled the snakes with the slits in the center. Now, this is still, yeah, she probably wished she had stayed passed out. It's a very curious case, you know, because the implication is that whatever they were using to subdue her wasn't quite working on this woman, because she kept coming to. Now, she's part Native American, and I've spoken with a lot of Native people in that region. The Superstition Mountains have a long tradition that revolves around these strange creatures that live underground and will abduct people if they have an opportunity.
Is the woman okay?
She is. She is suffering from, you know, basic symptoms that a trauma victim would have. I mean, she's had great difficulty in sleeping. She's, you know, hasn't driven the route since then, and is really sort of afraid to go out at night at this point. I would like to get her to the point where she's comfortable doing some regression in order to gain more information from exactly what she has experienced. You know, these people, it's a very traumatizing experience, so she may or may not get to that point. It's hard to say.
Where this location was?
I do know where the car died and where she was abducted from. And, of course, I've been into the Superstitions a number of times. It's a very strange place. It's, you know, it's sort of a what I call a paranormal hotspot, in that the phenomena there ranges from, you know, UFO sightings to cryptid reports, the full gamut of high weirdness, so to speak.
Yeah, those mountains, the Superstition Mountains, they're legendary. And it's not only just visible things that happen, but I understand it kind of closes in around you. It gives you an emotional reaction when you're there, especially by yourself.
Yeah, there's also a, sort of a disorienting effect in some of that area, too. You know, it has a very high rate of disappearances in the Superstitions. And, you know, there are some very bizarre cases. I mean, you know, a case of two brothers walking side by side on a path, and one steps off a path just for a moment to tie a shoe or something, and when he turns back around, his brother has vanished. Just, you know, completely unexplainable things. And the rate of recovery, I was talking, actually at the Alamo conference, a gentleman approached me who used to do search and rescue in that region of the country, and he was telling me some stories and telling me that, you know, they just, there's very poor rate of recovery when someone is lost in the superstition.
Probably it's not a good idea to go up there alone.
Probably not. I mean, I have to admit that I've done that, but
yeah.
Well, you're still here, David, so you survived.
I survived.
I'm kidding around about that, but David, when you investigate paranormal things for 35 years like you have, have you ever been scared, Steph? I mean, have you ran across something that was just really terrifying? Now, I'm not trying to destroy your macho image, David.
Oh, I'm not too worried about that. I wouldn't say I've been terrified. I've definitely been in situations where I was very concerned. But, you know, I tend to have the opposite direction when reaction when something really weird is going on. I'm the guy who's likely to run towards it as opposed to away from it.
Well, I mean, I guess that's what you're out there for anyway. So you're kind of an Indiana Jones type
guy. Yeah, and that may be bold or stupid, I guess, depending on the circumstances. But,
I notice you're interested in cryptozoology, David. What's the strangest creature you've run across? Something that really fascinates you?
You know what... what I find a really fascinating creature that falls into the cryptozoology frame is the skinwalker.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, David, because I've heard you've been up there to the Skinwalker Ranch.
Well, I can't officially admit that. Let me say it's a fascinating area.
Okay, without any admission of guilt that you've been on the property, what do you make of it?
Oh, wow, you know, Jerry, that's another really a paranormal hotspot, and it's not. And I want to let people know it's not just the ranch. This area, Skinwalker Ranch.
Why don't you tell us, tell the listeners at least where the ranch is?
Yeah, Skinwalker Ranch is in northern Utah, and it's in a region called the Uinta Basin, and it's a very remote area. I mean, it's surrounded by little towns, Roosevelt, Vernal. It's a very small communities in that area. It the entire region again is a hot spot for activity, and we get a lot of UFO reports, a lot of cryptid reports. There are a number of sites in that area that are haunted. So again, we see this convergence of just all kinds of paranormal activity. I've been up there in that region on a number of occasions, and gosh, almost every time there's strange activity in the sky. Now, is that military craft? You know, it's hard to say, because to the west we have Dugway Proving Ground. It's pretty far west, but it's still, it's certainly likely to be in a flight path, and that's a lot of people don't know about that, but that some people consider that the new Area 51 because...
Anthony Sanchez is fascinated with that area. He wants to go up there and investigate a little bit. Maybe you could go with him.
Yeah, it's another one of those regions. You're not going to get very close to there, just like Area 51 itself, but it's still fascinating. And I have no doubt there's, different types of aircraft being tested and everything in the region, but... you go back to the Uinta Basin, there's just too much weird activity to write it off as, a mistaken identity or coincidence or anything else. And, people are seeing, Bigfoot-like creatures, dogman reports.
Dogman? You have to tell me more about that.
A dogman is, the term actually came from the Midwest. And it was very well known in Wisconsin and Minnesota, some of that area, where they were having these reports of this bipedal creature that had tainted features. Now, there was a whole hoax that was pulled off by a radio host at one point surrounding the dog man and sort of made a joke out of the whole thing. But if you go back again to native legend in the area, you'll find that there are these reports of what Europeans might call a werewolf, a bipedal, tainted creature. We find the same thing in Utah. There are reports of this, for lack of a better term, a dog man. And it's a humanoid with dog-like features.
Is he like a werewolf?
Yeah, basically like a werewolf that, you know, people have seen in their yards. I mean, I spoke to a gentleman who swears this thing was on the roof of his house. You know, they have chickens and farm animals have disappeared when these things have been sighted. And there's, you know, there's something to it. Exactly what it is, I'm not sure. I haven't seen one of those personally, but it's very curious when you get into that region and you realize that the native peoples in that area, you know, they have a tradition that they talk about the skinwalker. And skinwalker is, and by native definition, is someone who essentially is practicing a form of evil magic, and they have learned to essentially shapeshift by stealing the skin of another creature. And through doing so, they can literally, physically change form into that creature if they choose to.
In your paranormal investigations, David, have you ever seen anything like that happen?
I haven't seen anything like the dog man, no. You know, I'm convinced that there are some strange creatures out there. I mean, I personally had an encounter with a Sasquatch when I was pretty young, and it was something that sort of spurred me on to delve into cryptozoology.
Yeah, you know, when we mentioned you were going to be on, we mentioned the Skinwalker Ranch, and a fellow in Holland has written me on Facebook about the Skinwalker Ranch and about you. He wants to get your opinion or something. Hans Walkum, I think, is the way he pronounces his name. But first, let me ask you this, David. Are there other places in the world like the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah?
Well, it's definitely paranormal hotspots worldwide. You know, I think everyone is unique in some way. Of course, this, you know, Skinwalker Ranch is unique just in the fact that the property was bought by a multimillionaire who decided to do a personal study of the phenomena going on there. And, you know, despite the idea that it was going to be an open area for people to, you know, explore this phenomena and things would be reported or published or whatnot, that's never happened. And, you know, as this moved forward, it's actually become a very secluded, they have guards 24/7 on that property.
They don't want you around there, huh?
No, they don't. They're very adamant.
I wonder why.
Well, and you know, strange things have happened, Jerry. I mean, a year ago last month, I believe it was, the the gate leading up to Skinwalker has always just been a simple, you know, farm gate across this road. And sometime last year, they decided to increase the security there because they just got sick of people crossing that gate. And you go to it now, and there's like a dozen cameras mounted on these trees. Now, this is a rural ranch in Utah that, you know, what exactly are they trying to protect? What's going on there? They feel the need for a dozen security cameras to watch a gate.
I wonder if those security guards have seen some pretty scary things.
Yeah, well, you know, you talk to security guards and they'll swear up and down that there's absolutely nothing going on there, you know, that they're worried about the farmhouse getting vandalized or something. Well, that farmhouse is pretty old.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't do it any harm to have somebody tearing some of the walls down.
Anyway, let's get back to Hans and his posting from Holland. He thinks that the Skinwalker Ranch and all of those strange beings and things that are happening there, they have an ET origin. What do you think?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the theories, because when you go to these spots, you know, particularly the Uinta Basin, there's an amazing number of UFO reports, people that, you know, see these strange, not even just giant crap, but these, you know, orbs of light that come out of the hillside or will do, you know, very strange maneuvers before they vanish. And, you know, we can get into all kinds of conspiracy aspects, of course, because a lot of these paranormal hotspots around the world are often tied very closely to supposed underground bases, you know, like Dulce, New Mexico, for instance. A lot of rumors there of underground military base. Mount Weather in Virginia is another region where there's, you know, we know there's underground government facility there, and there's strange reports in the area. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, until we are able to collect more data and maybe have someone come out from the inside to start giving us some information, it's hard to say exactly what's causing these areas. But they are something, I think, to watch very closely, because it's there's clearly something happening when we have so much phenomena concentrated in a region.
Hans wrote me quite a detailed, I guess, description of his hypothesis that he's come up with. He seems to think that, well, for instance, the wolves, when you shoot them, they disappear. You don't kill them. Have you heard that?
Yeah, that particular story is famous from Hunt for the Skinwalker, which is the book that was written about the ranch.
Yeah, we have an interview that we did several years ago with George Knapp and Dr. Colin Kelleher about the Skinwalker Ranch and about that book. Anyway, let's get to Hans. He thinks the other theory he has, David, maybe these things are androids, the wolves, you know, when you shoot them and nothing happens to them.
Well, that's always a possibility, I guess.
The other thing he suggests is that maybe the ETs are playing mind games with us, manufacturing things that we think we're seeing and they're not there.
Yeah, that's a possibility. It could be some kind of illusion that's being created. That's very possible.
You're right. You never know. What are you investigating now? You got anything you're working on?
Well, right now I have a number of open investigations. One of them is the one in the Superstition Mountains that I spoke about earlier. There's also a couple of other incidents in and around the Superstitions that I'm looking into, involving some UFO sightings and some of these purported creatures that seem to live in caves or tunnels in the Superstitions. And I'm splitting my time up. I mean, it's been a very busy year. I'm also wrapping up a second book that'll be out later this year.
Well, good. We'll have you back on when the book's out.
When that's out, too.
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's talk a little bit about UFOs. And since this is a UFO show, what's your theory about these things? Are they interstellar, or could they be interdimensional from another reality?
Yeah, I lean more towards some of Jacques Vallée's ideas, and you know that, and also in, you know, and into this whole realm of interdimensional travel as opposed to stellar travel. So you know, I think there's so much going on here on the planet that we're not aware of. I mean, there's a lot of stories of things going on underground, and you know, in these caves and tunnels around the world. And, you know, why are so many of these creatures, or reptilians and otherwise, going underground when people witness them or encounter them? So
the thing about these creatures living underground, I mean, how do they see? You ever been in a cave? It's pitch black.
Well, it is for a human, but for something that is adapted mm-hmm. to living in those conditions, not necessarily so.
Okay. What about hauntings? What do you make of that? Ghost stories. You investigated a lot of those?
Yeah, I have. I've investigated a lot of haunted sites. That sort of falls into a few categories. You get cases where there are what I call residual hauntings. Basically, it's a recording on the house or the land itself that causes something to repeat. So, you know, like the classic woman in white who goes running down the hallway every, you know, third Tuesday at 12 o'clock. That's some kind of an impression that's been left on the dwelling or the land itself that essentially has recorded a traumatic event, and hence it keeps repeating itself. And then you have hauntings that are, you know, what are called intelligent hauntings, where the spirit, whatever it is seemingly interactive with the people around it to varying degrees, whether it's a poltergeist where they're, you know, angry and manifesting things, or whether it's a simple case of, you know, Aunt Gladys who passed away 10 years ago trying to communicate. Then there's a whole other range, and part of this will be explored a little bit in my next book, and that gets into the region of thought forms. And I think what you find is, you know, I've investigated a lot of historical sites and found that some of the famous ghost stories that are there really don't have any historical foundation. You know, the story was made up at some point in order to generate interest or attract tourism or whatever, but what happens is the story becomes so well known that literally thousands of people go there each year expecting to see a particular spirit, and all those people are pouring energy into the existence and the possibility of that particular spirit. It builds up a type of energy that can eventually manifest to some degree as that supposed famous ghost.
Well, it's true. If you keep hearing things over and over, pretty soon the reality exists. I mean, it becomes fact almost.
That's right.
So yeah. You've been doing this a long time. So what a percentage would you say of these cases, hauntings and things like that, ghost stories, that you go out and investigate, what percentage turns out to be possible, maybe a reality?
Well, if we're talking historic ghost, that's really hard to say. I'd say maybe half of them are, you know, stories that have been created or expanded upon somewhere along the way to become something that is nowhere close to what the original tale was.
David, do you know of anyone that's ever been killed by a supernatural force, I mean, that you know about?
Well, there's some places that just because of the nature of what happened there, I think they're disturbing. I'll give you an example of the Valeska axe murder house. It's a really popular, quote, haunted tourist attraction. But personally, I find the place rather disturbing, and there's just this creepy edge to it. Now, part of that is psychological, because this is a place where, you know, a whole bunch of kids were murdered by an axe murderer. And, that's just, for anyone who's a parent, I think there's a very disturbing edge to a place like that. So that harkens back again to this residual energy that's created in an environment where there's been, you know, a gruesome set of circumstances. So I don't, you know, anyone who's human is going to react to some of these places, that's the bottom line.
We're coming up pretty rapidly on your next personal appearance. That'll be at the Wake Up Now conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and at the Marriott there. What topic are you going to be speaking about?
I'm going to be talking about tulpas and thought forms. So a little bit of this material we covered with some of the hauntings, but a lot of material related to the ability of the human mind to manifest and to create. And it goes back into some of the ancient Tibetan teachings. Tulpa is actually a Tibetan word. And I'll be going into that material there at Wake Up Now conference. And that's, that's a great conference if you're in the region or you're willing to travel to it. Some amazing people. As you mentioned, Jerry, Nick Redfern's going to be there. My good friend Bill Murphy from Sci-Fi's Factor Faith will be there. Lynn Buchanan, a whole long list of people. It's going to be a great conference. It's 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be August 10, 11, and 12 at the Albuquerque Marriott. And, boy, the time really got us here. David, do you have any closing comments?
I don't. Anybody's free to contact me if they have, you know, strange cases or anything. Check out my blog, which is twocrowsparanormal.blogspot.com. Spell out the two, T-W-O.
David Weatherly, it's been a pleasure having you on.
It has, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks for being on. David Weatherly will be at the Wake Up Now conference August 10, 11, and 12 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Enter Wake Up Now in your search engine and get details. Well, we have plenty right here at JerryPippin.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.